The air in that office didn't smell like success. It smelled like expensive cologne, stale coffee, and a very specific kind of desperation that only men with too much money and too little oversight can manifest. I remember walking into the glass-fronted lobby of Vane and Associates for the first time, my heels clicking against the marble, thinking I had finally made it. I was 24, sharp, and hungry. I thought I was there to trade commodities. It took me 3 months to realize that on that floor, the commodities weren't oil or gold. The commodities were us. It started with the ranking. It wasn't a physical list, not at first. It was a language. If you walked past the mahogany desks of the senior partners, you'd hear them talking in numbers, but they weren't discussing the FTSE 100 or the closing price of crude. They were discussing the new intake of analysts. She's a solid 7, but her dividend yield is low because she wears those sensible trousers, I heard Mark say once. Mark was a managing director who looked like he'd been carved out of a block of ham and poured into a Savile Row suit. He didn't even lower his voice when I walked past. Why would he? You don't lower your voice when you're discussing the inventory. The environment was a hyper-masculine pressure cooker where respect was an alien concept, replaced entirely by access. To get ahead, you didn't just need to be good at your job. You needed to be accessible. That was the word they used. It meant being the girl who stayed for the third round of drinks at the pub. It meant laughing when a senior VP made a joke about your skirt. It meant understanding that your value was pegged to how much you boosted the collective ego of the men in the room. I watched brilliant women, girls with first-class degrees from Oxford and LSE, slowly transform themselves into curated versions of what these men wanted. We weren't colleagues. We were currency. We were used to trade favors, to soothe tempers after a bad trading day, or to be the eye candy brought along to client dinners, to seal a deal that the men weren't smart enough to close on their own. I'll never forget the Christmas party at that boutique hotel in Mayfair. The booze was flowing like it was subsidized by the government, and the music was loud enough to vibrate the teeth in your head. I was standing near the bar when I saw Julian, my direct supervisor, huddled with a major client. Julian looked at me, then looked at the client, and whispered something that made them both bark with laughter. A few minutes later, Julian came over, put a heavy, sweating arm around my shoulder, and told me that the client was very impressed with my work on the quarterly report. Then he leaned in, his breath smelling of expensive scotch and cigarettes, and told me that if I played my cards right and made sure the client had a truly memorable night, my promotion to associate would be fast-tracked. He didn't say the words. He didn't have to. The transaction was hanging in the air between us, as cold and clinical as a spreadsheet. The worst part wasn't Julian. The worst part was that for a split second, I actually considered it. That's what that place did to you. It skewed your internal compass until north was whatever direction the money was blowing. I looked around that room and saw other women doing exactly what was expected of them. I saw the way they leaned in, the way they touched a sleeve, the way they modulated their voices to be breathy and compliant. They weren't weak. They were survivors. They had looked at the system, realized it was rigged, and decided to play the only hand they were dealt. I stayed for 2 years. 2 years of nodding at locker room talk that would make a sailor blush. 2 years of watching men half as talented as me get promoted because they played golf with the right people. 2 years of adapting. That's the bit that sticks in my throat now. I adapted. I started wearing shorter skirts. I started swearing more to fit in. I started looking at the new girls with the same predatory assessment I saw in the men, wondering if they were going to be the new blue-chip stock that would devalue my own position. I became a version of myself that I didn't recognize. I was hard, cynical, and complicit. I remember the day I quit. There was no big dramatic showdown. No cinematic moment of telling them all to go to hell. I was sitting at my desk, looking at a thread on the internal messaging system. The men had started a literal fantasy league, where they were bidding on which female staff members would quit or get fired after the upcoming merger. I saw my name. I saw the comments about my market value. I saw a joke about my legs that was so graphic it made me feel physically sick. And then I saw a reply from one of the other women in the office. A woman I thought was my friend. She had joked along with them. She had joined in the trade. I realized then that the office wasn't just a place where women were currency. It was a place that turned women into the very people who spent it. We were all devaluing each other just to keep our own heads above water. I didn't say a word. I just packed my bag, walked out the glass doors, and never went back. I left the bonus on the table. I left the career path behind. I walked out into the London rain and felt for the first time in 24 months like a human being instead of a line item. I'm in a different industry now, a better one. But sometimes, when I'm in a meeting and a man speaks over me, or I see that specific look in a client's eye, I feel that old coldness creep back in. I hate them for what they did, but I hate myself more for how long I stayed and how easily I learned to speak their language. In that office, we weren't people. We were just figures on a ledger, and the cost of doing business was our souls.